This is the Saxo Market Call, daily insights on what is moving the financial markets.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It's Friday, July 16th, 2021. And finally getting a bit more risk off here. We've talked a lot about divergences in the market, at least the U.S. market, where the broader sort of median equity was not doing very well, and this rally was increasingly concentrated in the big mega cap names. It's a pretty broad sell-off yesterday. A lot of the damage was raised by the close, and we've bounced a bit overnight, but just signs of a wobble there. It's always hard to do attribution. Is this a widening concern on Delta variants, etc.? Hard to say here. I think it's maybe just time for some consolidation here after quite a run higher. Stain, I don't know if you're anything you would pull away from this market backdrop here, just in terms of the general risk sentiment here, whether it's on the COVID variants or what the market sort of psychology is here as we're looking forward to the rest of this quarter.
I think for me, probably the most interesting part is that we had a week where Powell was out in force and trying to restate the commitment to longer, lower for longer, and trying to address the issue of tapering as something that was, you know, being considered, yet it was, in his opinion, far away. On the other hand, I think the inflation scare is for real. Although, of course, we've seen prices drop in terms of yields, I still think it is definitely something people are not ignoring. It seems like that if you look at the angering of inflation, it's now running at 2.3, 2.5% on average in terms of the Wall Street analysts. And that is a far in excess of what Fed sees, which they continue to see something at 2.1 as we come into 23. So I think the market is, you know, as you say, it's saturated with all of the positive news that has been given, the excess liquidity provision. But I think to some extent, if you look at sitting here Friday morning, look at the market through the last week, it's kind of disappointing. It didn't have more momentum considering the amount of verbal support, at least the market got.
Yeah, that's a great point. So looking at something like our bubble stocks, equity theme basket, month to date down minus 9.3%. We've talked a lot about interest rate sensitivity. We saw signs of that quite a bit in recent weeks. But this latest bout, and like you said, all the verbal support from Fed Chair Powell, who's about as dovish as one could expect, and we've sort of erased all the reaction in the Fed expectations market from that really hot June CPI print. Just not getting anything out of that. So yeah, I would argue as well, this is a sign of some near-term exhaustion. And you know, I'm getting way ahead of myself. We've talked about this before, but in your mind, what is the correction magnitude that would be needed to trigger a fresh round of concern, assuming that the third mandate, so-called, of the S&P 500, comes into play here? Is it 5%? Is it 10%?
It's 10%. So when we're nearing, you know, the 8, 9, 10%, we've seen again and again that the Fed spokespeople, the governors comes out in force. And you see, certainly if we stay there for a while, then we also see the fiscal support is being ramped up in terms of what goes on. So I think, you know, the American politician goes on holiday pretty soon in 2 weeks with the debt ceiling outstanding, but feeling that looking at the stock market, the market not really concerned about that issue. I think that is one of the classic mistakes that, you know, the market needs some sort of assurance that things are progressing in terms of all of what we have been promised. And don't forget, apart from, you know, the debt ceiling obviously needing to be increased in size and probably with a better scope in terms of what needs to happen, it's also a case that, you know, the tapering is still very much on the table. So I think we are, and I said this again, I think August is a huge month and could be a harbinger for not only the balance of 2021, but also 22, because in the second half of this year, we will know whether the inflation is transitory or not. And of course, I think both of us is in the camp that it is not transitory. There is a risk of a catch-up effect in terms of interest rate, because the marginal cost of capital has to go up, considering that everything in the world has to be debt financed. It is not financed through better productivity or businesses doing better. So for me, it's really just, we are probably starting a little bit early in terms of people taking chips off the table. And we've seen a number of prominent Wall Street names out all over the last couple of days also indicating agreeing with this kind of sentiment.
Yeah, and then you see on slide three, so part of that August timeframe argument is the drawdown of the U.S. Treasury's general account with the Fed. We've talked about this so much, I don't want to do the background once again on this, but we finally got the latest weekly update of that yesterday, and it's down at its lowest for the cycle here, well below $700 billion now, and about $150-plus billion to go to get below that target they've established for themselves before August 1st of $500 billion. You know, a prominent figure, a controversial figure for many, arguably Gundlach, the bond manager, arguing, and we've argued this as well, that a lot of it's really difficult to get any price discovery in the treasury market when you have this huge liquidity from this winding down of the treasury account and all the savings from the stimulus. Let's not forget, a lot of the stimulus was not spent. It's been pent up into savings. Banks have too much liquidity and the treasury is only piling it on here. So this is sloshing around in the system. And to your mind, do you think we could pivot as well? I have the 10-year future chart there on slide three on the right there, as you know, getting down to yields that are close to lows for the cycle here, 1.3% on the close yesterday. Is there a potential for a pivot in the longer term interest rates as well?
Absolutely, and I think Gundlach is addressing that issue as well, saying that, you know, interest rates are too low, and he will take the high side or higher side of an inflation bet here. And he is, you know, everything being equal, he's one of the biggest bond managers in the world. So I do think he represents, you know, people with decision power in terms of what they want to do with the long end. We also see very clearly from the banks that they are willing to deposit at the reverse repo relatively to buying into the long end of the on the bonds, indicating that interest rate, in the words of Gundlach, is ridiculously low where they are right now, especially considering that, and as I think he's right in stating that the Fed has changed the definition of transitory from 2 to 3 months to 6 to 9 months, which of course is a great luxury that central banks can have, that they keep the same policy, but they keep changing the premise under which they define that exact policy. And I think that is exactly what's going on. They're wishing, hoping, and praying that inflation goes away. It's not going away. And I think that goes to, I think, a piece that you also like that we've been sharing from Gabe Kal, who says, you know, think about inflation in terms of what actually drives inflation. There is a demand side and a supply side. If the demand side is larger than the supply side, there will be inflation in an economy. Looking at demand, we know for a fact that we have a number of factors that is still not being accelerated and used in terms of how big they will be. And that, of course, is transformation into the green and infrastructure overall. We are only one step into a marathon on those two. So demand is very unlikely to come down, because if it comes down in the private sector, it would be replaced by government sector. Then on the supply side, we simply do not have the ability to increase supply. One thing is that the Fed's wording on transitory actually makes a lot of companies believe that it is transitory, which then again means that they, as a board, as an executive management, don't feel obliged to increase the CapEx, because, you know, they're being told by the smartest people in citation mark in the world, the central bankers, that this is going to go away. It's not going away. And then we see increasingly that the delivery time on chips are increasing. I think now it's 28 weeks. We are seeing that the shipping prices, shipping rates are going through the roof. We're seeing that despite the fact that everyone tried to make the case that the rise in inflation is about used cars, but you know, used car prices are up 50%. So this is not going away. I'm off for, as I said a few times, I'm off for a renewal of my lease on my car. I need to order my car at least 9 months in advance before having the ability to get my car next summer. You know, these times, the lead time, the delivery time, the prices at which they are trading is clearly continuing to increase and not decrease. And you know, I was promised when I started talking about inflation around Christmas that by this time we will all be over and we will have a huge amount of liquidity, so a capacity being being given to the market by these companies. These companies can, in their own self-interest, have no willingness to abandon the buyback programs and support for their own stocks to do capex. Ultimately, the winner in this game will be the companies that do capex. But for now, the market is back to pricing high multiples to companies with known cash flow, which means they are having no debt and no capex.
Yeah, and just to bolster your point, you're seeing the response by the Biden administration as well. It's getting such a high profile, the shipping situation, that they're looking into that. And then on housing, so as you point out, if the private sector isn't going to build houses, it looks like the public sector might step in and get some houses built. So this this attitude from the public sector has certainly changed on that front. And then bolstering the inflation story overnight, New Zealand reporting hotter than expected CPI for Q2. You can see the charts on slide 4. So the CPI you see there on the top left at year on year getting to 3.3%. That's the year on year is the maximum basing effect issue from the year ago pandemic timeframe. But look at the sequential 1.3% quarter on quarter. Annualize that, and you're talking about a 5% plus inflation pace annualized. You can see why the RBNZ has stepped away from its QE and why the market's predicting a rate hike later this year. As I've indicated, the Aussie QE two-year spread, it's collapsing. It could go further. It has gone further in the past. I wonder if this spread is getting towards its maximum potential. We've talked about the green transformation priorities that so many governments around the world have, and a lot of that stuff that needs to be, that are inputs into that transformation, copper, even uranium eventually, it's at, in the longer run, are in Australia. So I'm really curious to see how this shapes up and if the RBA is really behind the curve later this year. I certainly hope the latest lockdowns there on COVID variants are a distraction that will be cleared up in the coming weeks. And then we're all, questioning what the heck's going on with the dollar. I've shown this euro dollar chart ad nauseum on slide 5, waiting for resolution there. I think the resolution will go in the direction of risk sentiment in the near term. So risk sentiment, if it continues to consolidate a bit here, we could see a breakthrough down through that level, 117.75, and a capitulation trade that looks at something like 116. On the earnings front, not a whole lot to report today. Charles Schwab, I think quite interesting there, maybe some risks of with less activity for the individual investor space of a miss there, but I'm not the equity strategy. This is not a prediction, but certainly the space has been challenged recently since the big peak in activity in the market, especially in terms of retail trade volumes in the February timeframe. And then Stain, I put up a couple of charts here. And actually just want a brief comment from you, just because we've seen such a confluence of stories on climate. And we saw this EU so-called Fit for 55 plan, this comprehensive a plan that has to, of course, be approved by member countries, but it's a comprehensive plan for reducing emissions by 55% by 2030 relative to 1990 levels. And the huge issue there being the carbon border tax, a very interesting way to do protectionism. And then we've seen the Bank of Japan overnight with its initiative. It's a bit weak stuff compared to some of the other central banks, signaling interested in supporting green lending by allowing banks to borrow interest rate free and even get some carve outs and exemptions for the negative assessment of their negative policy rate on the reserves held at the central bank for those green related investments and loans. And then discussing also buying foreign currency-based green bonds. So you would imagine if the EU is issuing lots of those, the Bank of Japan will be happy to buy a few of them. And then China out announcing its carbon, its own carbon trading scheme, carbon emissions trading scheme. It is a bit limited to power companies. I think it was 2,200 power companies. And then the price of the actual emissions is very low, almost 85-something percent lower than the current euro price. But any takeaway from this, I mean, it's kind of obvious, a bit of a leading question, but what's the next step here? Where should we focus our attention on this issue?
I think that we really have to compute the cost of this border tax that will be on carbon for EU. Either it's a stroke of genius or it is something that will make Europe widely uncompetitive, relatively speaking, considering that the EU and EU states overall wants to drive a green agenda. It's kind of interesting that all of the metals that goes into this green transformation process will be met by a huge wall of taxes if they are produced under what is deemed to be non-green. In other way, it's just increasing the marginal cost of doing a green transformation in Europe is just increased by whatever tax they're going to put on that. Of course, that's 2 years down the line, but already it's being announced that these emission contracts and emission allowances is being extended to the shipping industry and to the airline industry. So you can imagine this bifurcation in the market between European-based companies and non-European-based companies. And I think at least one of the obvious conclusions for that will be that emerging market will have a hard time. You know, if you consider your emerging market simplistically as a model where you have resource-based economies that creates a cash flow times the world market prices for whatever commodity they produce. And then classically, some of the Western countries like the US and Europe imports those products. Then the marginal cost and the marginal sell will move in the wrong direction for these companies. In terms of China and its emission contract, it's pretty clear that the green renewable agenda is very forceful power. And probably what will be the main driver of the next generation of Chinese policy in terms of what we saw in 2008 was a build up in terms of building cities and infrastructure. This time it will be driven, in my opinion, by green. So I think what we're seeing is a warning signal that the green transformation politically is now very well anchored. There's no reason at all to doubt the ability of these governments to spend money on this and to force capital into these trenches of small pockets of investments with a huge amount of misinvestment, of course, coming from that. But overall, the momentum of the overall industry will rise. It will all happen, as you know, John, and I know it's one of your favorite sort of pushback, is that the marginal cost of doing this is just increasing exponentially almost to the consumer.
And you actually yourself, you sent out a chart very late last night. Shame on you for being in front of the monitor so late. But the world energy consumption per capita, a chart by this Gail Sverberg of OurFiniteWorld.com. I don't have a chart on our slide deck, but just showing or indicating that the world energy consumption per capita could be falling here. And unless, talking about productivity, if green energy is not as productive as the black stuff, at least in terms of the near term, yes, we know there's residual costs in terms of the climate. The difficulty is that we could be facing a real growth challenges, couldn't we?
Yeah, no, it's a super interesting chart, and we will put it in one of the presentations next week. And basically, there seems to be a high correlation between the global growth, and here we're talking about real global growth, not the one produced headline through intervention from governments. So the energy consumption per capita is going down, which at least historically has been a good point to that we have a crisis of growth. So, although it's almost illegal to talk about, in one of the scenarios we need to put in the book when all this stimulus goes away is this stagflation light environment. In other words, we have very, very high spending and deficits driving sort of a small and unproductive real economy. And the private sector is just constantly just buying stocks and buying their own stocks instead of doing it. So we are going into this phase of being probably the most unproductive society ever, with the highest valuation and the highest debt to substantiate that. So you can sort of you can solve for the circle in terms of saying that the reason why we have valuation is how a high amount of debt is spending by governments. The problem is, again, and I think we talked about that last time as well, there really isn't any link to the real economy. Central bank sees the world through the prisms of how the stock market is doing. As we said before, a 10% drop is a big issue. What is not a big issue for the government is the fact that they are, you know, crowding out private capital, that the solution on energy needs to come from new innovation and more spent on basic research. The solution to inequality is to have a better structure in the labor market, negative capital income, tax regimes and the like. So, John, I can name at least 20 different things that would be productive, which is not on the list of the government. The government's list says spend money. Money doesn't cost anything, hence you should be spending more. Make sure that green transformation is left, right, and center in terms of the policy. And overall, the central bank will monetize this debt. It is an ugly forecast for the future, but a future which the market is saying and fading in terms of the reaction right now, because you know they do know that governments and the idiocy of governments can continue for much longer than we can stay solvent, to rephrase John Maynard Keynes' famous quote.
All right. That's a great parting shot from your side of this. And then let's look at just very briefly, put up a couple of charts of the University of Michigan inflation expectations for the year ahead and for the 5 to 10 year timeframe on slides 7 and 8. And you know, this is survey based, but it is inflation. There is always going to be a psychological and a forward-looking guidance, or sorry, forward-looking component psychologically. And interesting to see, we saw that dip in June. Is this followed up with a further dip in July, or will the trend continue higher, especially for the 5 to 10 year? And then just finally on the macro calendar, slide 9, the June retail sales out of the U.S., is the consumer pulling back here as the stimulus effect continues to fade, or are they starting to dig into some dis-savings and looking more confident as the job market is quite strong? And the next week, ECB meeting and a couple of other interesting central bank meetings as well. Stane, it was great to have you on the call today. Thanks for joining. And everyone have a great weekend out there. And we'll be back next week with the next Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter at Saxo Market Call or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.